Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551, wash your hands, is our text number. Joe at rte.ie from anywhere in the world. Okay, a number of callers today contacting us about their dealings with banks, because as you know, the banks announced last week with great passion, and you saw their representative on the news, great passion, saying that they will step up to the plate and there will be a 3-month moratorium. But some of our callers aren't experiencing that love. Erica, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. Good to talk to you.
Okay, tell us your story. What happened?
Yeah, exactly as you opened up there, delighted sitting there last week. Great sense of relief. My husband was on his last pay pack as of last Friday, roughly. So rang up the bank, AIB, if that's okay to name them. Yeah. And they said, basically we had to meet 3 criteria to avail of that 3 months. Basically, I don't work. My husband's the breadwinner of the house. Mm-hmm. And I was basically told that I have to be in a full-time job as well as he, mm-hmm. which I don't understand. And we have to have, wait for it, 2 months mortgage of savings in our current account to prove to them that we have that. Now, if I had that, why would I possibly be ringing them up to say I can't pay my mortgage? I'd be using my savings, obviously, to pay my mortgage.
And did they ask what your husband's employment was?
No, nothing like that, no. No, nothing. We didn't even get into that, we didn't. I just said he's on his last pay pack as of last Friday. I'm ringing up, I said, for me to help you, for you to also help us, so mm-hmm. we don't run into a race with each other, because none of us want that. Hoping I could avail of what Pascal was advertising with great empathy towards the nation. And it certainly wasn't the case for me and my husband and my family. Joe, we're up the
Irish wall. Banks are offering a 3-month moratorium to those affected by COVID-19 in order to alleviate financial pressure. The 5 core banks in Ireland, AIB, Bank of Ireland, KBC, Permanent TSB and Ulster Bank, as well as the Banking and Payments Federation, met today to discuss financial measures over... This is a time of writing over 150,000 people out of work. Unfortunately, it's higher mm-hmm. than that. Mm-hmm. In a bid to help those who've lost their jobs and are under financial strain, the 5 banks are implementing the following measures. A payment break for up to 3 months for business and personal customers affected by COVID-19, to be followed mm-hmm. by ongoing reviews depending on the scale and extent of the situation. Customers wishing to avail of this payment break should contact their respective bank. You contacted and you were told no.
We were told we didn't meet the criteria for that. But then I was told that maybe we could look into interest-only payments, or mm-hmm. There's another type of moratorium you can look into, but you have to send in a financial mm-hmm. spreadsheet. So basically they're asking you down to your breakfast, what you've had, your previous...
And that was always there.
Yes, it was always there. Yeah. Yes, we're all entitled to do that at all aspects of something goes wrong in your mortgage. But basically, 3 months to 6 months previous bank statements. Now, my 3 months, 6 months previous from to date would be healthy, because we have paid our mortgage and we were earning.
Okay.
So how does that prove anything regards okay. to...
Did they? Well, what business is your husband in?
He's in Wicklow car dealership.
Okay, and is he going to be, or did they raise this issue, is he going to be out of work longer than 3 months?
Well, none of us know
How
that.
How do we know, exactly? Sorry.
Yes, exactly. So we have to protect next month's mortgage, which comes out next yeah. week. So I am relatively going to go into arrears now, as of next week.
They're saying, apparently, AIB have come back to us to say, not you personally, but people don't qualify for the mortgage holiday, as your husband will be out of work for longer than 3 months. So a mortgage customer who finds themselves impacted by COVID-19 is entitled to a mortgage break and moratorium up to 3 months. This is regardless of savings or employment status. But you didn't...
No.
So that's contradictory.
Absolute contradictory, you know, and the gas thing about it is I have family members who avail of some of the other institutes, and the institutes turned around and said, what can we do today to help you?
Okay. Stay there, Erica. 51551, wash your hands. Richard Murphy. Richard, good afternoon. What bank are you dealing with, Richard?
Hi, good afternoon, Joe. I'm dealing with the same bank, I'm afraid.
AIB. What's your story?
Basically, I rang them up on Friday, and after a lengthy wait, which is understandable under the circumstances, they offered me an interest only. And my current mortgage is about $1,400 approximately per month. So then they went away and they did their figures and came back with an interest only quote of $1,086 per month.
So that's not a moratorium.
Well, that's not an interest only. That's what they offered me to begin with, and I explained because of my situation is. I live off rental income. I'm down in West Cork on the Seven Heads Peninsula, and we do Airbnb. I couldn't do long-term rents here because there's no one who wants to rent here long-term, and we're reliant mainly on American tourists who have obviously all cancelled, because of the situation. So I have no income as such. So I was looking. I then said, "Well, can I have?" A moratorium, and she said, "Well, you can fill out an SFS form and all the supporting documents." And I pointed out to her that this process takes at least 6 weeks, and my next payment is due in 2 weeks. But she had no answer to this. So, as we speak, I'm sitting in front of my computer, filling out an SFS form.
And what type of questions did they ask you in that form?
Oh well, it's a very lengthy form, which is can be done. I've done it before. I'm a victim of 2008, so I'm quite used to these forms. But I'm not in default with the bank or anything. They restructured everything. I've done everything that they've asked for the last 5 years, and so this is what I'm left with. Basically, I have no income of any sort. And I have no means of paying it, so I'm looking for what they said. If you're affected by this crisis, they would give us a moratorium, but they're not. Is the bottom line.
And your mortgage is 1,400 euros per month. They came back and said, actually, we'll reduce it. Well, temporarily, but you'll pay it back in time. They'll reduce it to just approximately 1,100 per month.
Yeah.
And why? But how do they describe the drop of only 300 euro as a moratorium?
They're interested. There are actually two mortgages, but they all have on the same expiry time.
Mm-hmm.
And one I'm paying 842 per month on, and they suggested reducing this one to 786. Mm-hmm. That's their interest only. And the other one is about 540, and that one they're going to reduce back to 300. So they were slightly better on that front. But how they come to their calculations, I don't know. But to any layman, that is not interest only. To me anyway, that doesn't look like.
So we have the highest interest rates in all of Europe, haven't we? Despite interest rates being in the negative at the minute. What are the prospects for you? You just can't pay it. You just don't have the money to pay your mortgage, full stop.
I simply don't have the money. I mean, I can, they've asked for a financial statement. My financial statement will show all my, there is money that's been going up until about 2 weeks ago, and now there's nothing gone into my account.
Stay with us for a sec, Richard, and Bandon. Laura is in Kilkenny. Which bank are you having problems with, or did you have problems with? Laura, please.
Yeah, hi, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Last Monday, I was told in work, my boss told me that he'll have to let me go because of the virus.
Right.
So since Monday, I tried to ring my bank, because I knew I wouldn't be able to pay my mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get through for a few days. I even went into my local branch, was told the same. I was given the phone number to ring, same as I was ringing.
Okay.
And, finally, I actually got through on Friday, last Friday.
Yeah.
And, he was asking me questions like, can I guarantee that I'll be back to work in 3 months and I'll be able to meet my payments? Like, how can I guarantee you? Yeah. Like, we don't know what's happening, you know, with this virus. And also, like, my mortgage payment should be out this week.
Yeah.
And he told me that it'll take about up to 7 working days to process my request.
Mm-hmm.
And that the bank still can take out my mortgage payment. Which I said, I can't afford it. There'll be no money in the account.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, how can we guarantee anything? It's just...
That was Bank of Ireland, but as it was raised as well... with Erica in her bank as well, can you guarantee that you'd be back and work in 3 months? None of us can.
We can't, exactly. So and like, I thought the banks came to an agreement to give us a break for 3 months. I was never late with my payment. I never missed a payment, nothing.
And Laura, did you work out what happens if... Now, I know you subsequently pursued it and you did get the break, is that correct?
He didn't tell me that I did get a break. He said that it'll take up to 7 working days to process.
Okay, well, hopefully you will. Have you worked out what? And has anyone worked out what will happen after the break? Like, you start hopefully repaying your mortgage, but you're going to repay a higher mortgage, aren't you? To cover the 3 months.
Yes, they're not going to extend my mortgage, but I'll have to pay. They're going to spread this 3 months that I'm missing over all my period, so the mortgage will go up. But it won't be as bad for me because I have another 33 years to pay.
Okay.
So,
on the Bank of Ireland website, the balance will be higher at the end of the 3 month period, the moratorium. Your subsequent repayments will increase and you will pay more interest.
I will, yeah, exactly.
So you should only apply for a break when you're satisfied you need to. Where is all this brouhaha? I'm reading from the bank statement where they say, the banks want to ensure the banking system stands ready to provide working capital support. The banking, just all of these statements, and when
at the moment,
in reality, the reality seems to be quite different. You, Finnegan, 51551, wash your hands. You,
how are you keeping, Joe?
Good. Well, tell us, which bank did you get through to?
I got through to AIB after trying for 2 days, and again, okay. And
just from what the minister said, a number of ministers have said, what did you believe was available to you?
Basically, after three, you could get a minimum of starting off with a 3 month break on your mortgage, where you wouldn't have to pay it if you couldn't pay it.
Okay, so what's your situation that prompted this call to AIB?
Well, I paid the mortgage last Monday, so I decided, right, I better just keep ahead of the posse here. Got onto the bank, said, look, lads, my business is gone, disappeared overnight. I'm a driver, so I'm self-employed.
Okay.
Just disappeared. That's grand. I can live with that. But I said, you know, we have to pay it back. It's not going to happen because I haven't got any money coming in. I won't have any money coming in for the foreseeable future. So they said, okay, let's see if you qualify. And I, bottom line is I didn't qualify. They said, you need to have twice your mortgage in your bank account or accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, if I had twice the money in the bank that's needed, I'd be paying the mortgage.
Which is exactly what Erica said.
Yeah,
the same
exactly
bank.
The same.
And, sorry,
it doesn't make sense.
It's exactly
so
what she was
are
told.
Not honouring what they told the minister, even though they were bailed out in 2008.
But it's neither is a sticking to their own statement.
No, well, is the minister telling lies, or is the bank?
Well, no one telling lies. A payment break up to 3 months for business and personal customers affected by CV19. That's you, definitely.
I fall into it.
To be followed by ongoing...
By the way, I'm in an industry that just disappeared overnight, so...
That's tourism.
Everybody works with me is in the same boat.
Tourism.
Yeah, more or less tourism. We drive people around. It just disappeared overnight.
Yeah, yeah. A payment break.
I tried to ring them this way. I read this morning, an hour and 7 minutes on the phone, and the phone was cut off.
A mortgage customer who finds themselves, I'm reading from a bank statement, a mortgage customer who finds themselves impacted by CV19 is entitled to a mortgage break or moratorium for up to 3 months. This
yes,
is regarding
common sense, Joe. This,
this is regardless of savings or employment status.
Well, any ordinary man in the street would take it that you're going to be given a 3 month moratorium, yeah. Or you're a minimum of 3 months, and then we'll review at the end of 3 months, maybe the way things are going, in the circumstances that are there today, which is common sense.
But
that's not happening. That's not the way they're doing it. They're still looking for their pound of flesh. The banks are. They want their money. Which is, they get it eventually.
Well, they will.
There's nothing sure. That banks will never give you nothing for nothing.
But it's also the comparison with other banks internationally where our interest, mortgage interest rates are so high. That's been pointed out.
Yeah, well, particularly when you consider how much the country suffered after we bailed them out in 2008, you'd think it's a bit of payback. We shouldn't do them any harm. And in the long term, they're going to win on it anyway.
Yeah, but capitalism doesn't work like that, Hugh. You know, David.
No, it's short term. To think long term.
Yeah, what they'd be saying is, sure, if we don't get our mortgage payments in, we'll go bankrupt.
So be it. The bank will have to bail them out again, so.
Or maybe we
should.
That's
what will happen.
The
country will bail them out. You know, they're not going to lose at the end of the day. Bankers never lose money.
Okay. And you made an aside there. You said, I've lost, my job is gone, my business is gone.
Oh, my business is gone. But I had a business up driving people around until about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. But you said,
and overnight just disappeared.
But you said, I can live with that. Is that just...
That's just a personal thing. You know, you just get up and survive type of thing.
That's your outlook. You're saying it's not my health and hopefully...
Exactly.
Okay, well said, yeah, well said.
You just don't like being screwed by the banks, and they're really doing it again.
Okay, well, that's four separate stories from four separate callers who contacted us separately with the same story about this much-hyped moratorium. That it's not happening for a significant number of people. It seems.
If there's four, there's a lot more out there.
Well, unless we get 1850 715 815 or joe@rte.ie, more callers. Laura, by the way, you also wanted to make the point that you worked in a denture clinic, which shut down, and you wear a mask and gloves even outside.
I don't go out much now, just to the shop. But I still wear my mask and my gloves just to protect myself, right? But I was asked in the shop, am I sick? Seriously, guys, come on.
Oh, for God's sake.
Like, it's the only thing we have to do is just stay home. There's so many people out there. I don't know what they're doing, but just stay home. We just have to stop the spread of the virus.
Yeah.
The sooner they'll all understand that, the sooner we'll all will be able to get back to work and back to normal.
Yeah. And where are you from originally, Laura? Can I ask?
Yeah, sure. I'm from Latvia.
And have you been talking to family back or friends back in Latvia?
Well, most of my family is here.
Okay. Well, do you know what this coronavirus situation is in Latvia?
I think it's about 150 people with the virus over there. No, that's so far. But everyone is, like, everything is closed. All schools, everything, like shops, only the food, you know.
Yeah.
Well, it's scary, like the way it's spreading. Like even yesterday, it's 120 people here in Ireland.
121, yeah.
Yeah, so just people stay home, and that's it. The best we can do.
And if you are out, maintain physical distance of 6 meters. Okay, Laura, we'll try and... Well, it's people telling their stories on Liveline, which is basically contradicting what the banks are saying and what the government are saying publicly. Okay, thanks, Erica, Richard Murphy, Laura, Hugh Finnegan. 51551, wash your hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And joe@rte.ie. Shirley, by the way, reminder, 5 o'clock today is the closing time for the John Boyne short story competition that he launched with Liveline here last week. The prize fund is now doubled to 7,200 in tranches of book tokens. I think there's going to be about 100 or 200 winners. I'll work it out now in a sec. There'll be 141 prize winners, 300 words or less, and you send it to John Boyne Story, B-O-Y-N-E, johnbynestory@gmail.com by 5 o'clock this afternoon. Three categories, 6 to 10, 11 to 14, and 15 to 18. 300 words or less. Okay, let me... Shirley Walsh, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You see, Shirley, I'm reading your call here. Do you think you're going to get any sympathy?
Possibly not, but maybe I could put my point across.
Yeah, please do, yeah.
Mine and the other smokers in this thing.
Okay.
At home, Joe, in Churchtown where I live, I'd only smoke one cigarette a day, and that's after my dinner.
Okay.
But I'm here in hospital.
How are you?
And came in with cellulitis. You may have heard of it.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
It's extremely painful and itchy and all sorts.
Yeah.
So you're in here all day long, and you're actually smoking more than you ever would. There's a bit of a wraparound happening on the phone. I don't know how clear I'm coming across.
Oh, you're loud and clear. You're in St. James's Hospital.
In St. James's Hospital. And it's a beautiful day out there, and I'm up here in the ward, not allowed out.
Oh, you're not allowed out?
No.
And, well, you are a patient. Why? I know a lot of patients are allowed out, even in their dressing gowns.
Yeah.
Whatever. Why are you not allowed out?
Well, that's a very good question, isn't it? There's nobody to bring me down, apparently. They're all... Look, the staff here are all lovely, Joe, and wouldn't complain about any of them. The staff are working their butts off. But the point is, this is taxpayers' money, and I'm being kept in here against my will. Mm-hmm. I love feeding the birds, and I'm looking out there now at the moment out the window at a beautiful wood pigeon, but I'm not sure he's too well. Anyway, you're not allowed to feed birds. And the waste in this hospital is unbelievable.
Okay. Now, go back. I'll come to that in a second. But come back to the smoking issue. You're not allowed. Where would you smoke if you were allowed out?
Exactly. Now, if I'm allowed out up here, we have a lovely little walled garden.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But if we're in the main hospital, you've nowhere to smoke. And they have a shed as you're approaching the hospital main doors. I don't know, do you know what
they're of course I do. Yeah.
Okay. Well, supposing you're walking, you got off the bus, say, at the bottom of the road.
Yeah, the Lewis.
And you're walking.
Yeah.
No, not the Lewis. That's the other side.
All right.
The bus, I think it's called the 123 or something
like
that.
Yeah, I know, the Rialto side, yeah.
Rialto side.
Yeah,
now you
where
have
they're
it.
Building the new children's hospital.
That's right. Well, now, as you're walking up there, to get to the main concourse, you know, the door that swings around and around, there's a bicycle shed. Now, it's an awful looking thing. It's plasticky, I don't know what stuff you call it. But anyhow, it's there. The bikes don't feel the cold. The smokers do. And in here, like I say, nothing to do and all day to do it. It forces you to smoke more.
When is the last
time? Compared to that man now that was on before me, I know smoking is not a, you know.
And when is the last time you had a smoke?
This morning.
Where?
They brought me down.
Oh, they brought you down?
Into the lovely walled garden.
Okay.
And the sun is beautiful. It's shining out there. And they just don't have enough staff to, you know.
They're not saying we can't bring you down, Shirley, because you might fall or...
No, they're not worried about me falling. They're just worried that there's not enough staff to bring me down when I want to go. And this is taxpayers' money, you know. I don't even need anybody to bring me down. But honestly, Joe, if you saw the waste that goes on. They threw away my credit card on me and it took me out of the banks. You don't talk to me about the banks. Permanent TSB. And 10 days to replace my card. I could go on forever, but I'm not going to. Compared to other people's problems, there's nothing at all wrong with me, Joe. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. How long have you been on behalf
of all the smokers, not just myself. Yeah.
But well, we had Professor Martin Cormack on the programme on Friday answering listeners' calls again. And someone mentioned smoking and he said, this is a really good time to try and give up smoking.
It is, but and things to do. Like I told you, I only smoke one cigarette at home. In here, I could be smoking 20, I don't know. So there's my story, Joe.
Yeah.
And it's not just my story. It's It's the story of all of the smokers. But we're coming in, you see, with one ailment, and you're going out with a chest infection. The cold.
By the way, are you allowed hold on to cigarettes?
No.
Oh, you're not?
They give them to you like a child. They give you two at a time or something like that.
Okay.
You're treated like a six-year-old, and it's ridiculous. There's just no need for it.
But you're in hospital, Shirley. You're in hospital.
I know I'm in
you're
hospital,
being treated
Joe, but
for
I prefer to be at home.
I know,
being held
I know, but
here against my wishes. And that's another issue altogether.
But do you not accept you should be in hospital with cellulitis? It's a very, as you say, very painful. Very painful.
Yes, but so. I'm not seeing enough medical doctors. What they're sending me up is shrinks. And holding me against my wishes. Do you know what I mean?
But
that's a different issue now.
Yeah, okay. Well, I didn't know that element of it, so I won't go there. Okay,
no.
Shirley, have you made friends in the hospital?
Yes, I have made lots of friends, and they're lovely people.
That's good.
And they're all, they'd all like to talk to you, but...
Okay.
I'm in here, Joe. It's a beautiful room all on my own. When I seen it at first, I said, no, I can't afford it.
Okay.
You
miss your home in Churchtown. Is that it as well?
Oh, big time I miss my home in Churchtown.
And how long have you been living there?
I'm living in Churchtown all my life. My father was Timothy Noonan, and some people that listen to you might have heard of him. We had a little shop.
What type of shop?
Sold everything from a needle to a.
Okay.
I mean, it was a grocery shop, but he sold virtually everything, coal and all that stuff. But he wasn't very good at it. He used to give too much credit away, so we went bankrupt.
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm deadly serious.
And in terms of the family, how...
Well, both my mum and dad are dead now.
Yeah.
And my mum's only dead 4 years. My husband died last year.
Mm.
And between the whole lot of it, I've had enough.
Yeah, I know, I understand that.
I just said, I'm going to ring Joe.
Okay. And did you work in the shop?
I was only about 9,
Okay.
But I did. I used to cut the ice creams. Do you remember ice cream wafers?
Yeah. Of course I do, with the little... Mm. You dip it into the sugared water and you scored the block and then you cut the wafers out of our garden.
That's right.
I did that when I was 12 and boiling shop in Gladagh Green. Oh my God.
I did it in my own father's shop.
They were great shops, weren't they? And they were great people.
They were.
TJ
Boyle
and his wife,
too much
Patricia,
credit and it went bang.
Okay. Surely
so then he had to go to work, you know.
I hope you make a speedy recovery. Mind yourself.
Thank you, Joe.
Okay, Shirley. That's Shirley in Churchtown in Dublin 14. 51551 joe@rte.ie. And is Donald there? Donald, good afternoon. Donald is one of the first people who actually contracted coronavirus. Donald, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe?
Good. Tell us your story.
Well, I was on holidays in Italy. I think when we left, I think there might have been maybe 12 or 20 cases in Italy at the time. We were in an area that was completely declared completely free. There was no problems at all. We came back through Verona Airport. Everything was fine. One of our group actually contacted HSE before we came back, was told everything was fine. There's nothing to worry about. When I came back on the Sunday before got back to normal, contacted HSE and said, look, you weren't in an affected area. There's nothing to worry about. You have no symptoms. You know, everything's fine. But unfortunately, the ground moved under our feet. And in fairness, through no fault of the HSE, obviously the Italian situation was far, far more serious than anybody actually knew at that time.
Okay.
And we all know where we are now with the Italian situation. And obviously anybody of our group... of 18, 7 tested positive when we came home.
Wow.
And that's only because one of our members was a nurse.
And many were displaying symptoms?
None that I know of.
Wow.
Now, you know, some of them are up. We're kind of a group that go travelling every year. A lot of people are from the north, but anyone that did hadn't really displayed any kind of symptoms that I know of. But I obviously only know about my own situation.
And How come you know did you display any symptoms, Don?
No, none.
So how do you know you're positive?
I got tested because I got tested. I mean, I had to insist on getting tested, but when I knew one of the group had it, I insisted on getting tested. And luckily enough, I was at the very early stages. I went up to St. Michael's before they had the drive-through centre and all that they have now. And I was tested up there, and I was given the results the next day. And we were taken up to the Mater, into St. Bernard's ward in the Mater. And I must give a shout out to all the staff there. They were absolutely fantastic. So we were just kept there for 7 days, showing no symptoms, no temperature, no cough, no anything. And then after the 7 days, we were told to go home, which we did, and self-isolate for another 7 days.
So you showed absolutely no symptoms?
No symptoms, no. Not that I know.
Well,
of.
You were in a hospital. They were looking for symptoms. They were looking temperature and fever and throat and cough.
Yeah.
And like of the 7 of the 18 that in that group that were positive for coronavirus, how many of them did not display any symptoms?
Well, like I say, I can't speak for all of them.
Yeah. Okay, I understand.
But the ones that I had contact with, the very first case, I think, did say she had some pains across her shoulder or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I know, nobody else showed any kind of symptoms, you know, that there would be seen as the classic symptoms or of this condition.
But the problem is you had it, you were carrying it.
That's the problem. That's exactly the problem. And that's the reason why I was glad your researcher contacted me, because that's the most important thing for people to realise, is that, look, you can actually be asymptomatic, but you may be a carrier.
And of course,
why all these issues. I mean, my business is in South County Wicklow. We've all seen the scenes in British Bay, in Glendalough, and all these places where people aren't, you know, are doing their best and trying to get a day out, but they're not exercising the social distancing that's required.
Physical distance, the 2 meters. But Donald, are you? I'll come back to that. Are you completely free of CV19 now?
Well, I have a certificate from the HSE, because before I would go back out into my daily life, I insisted on getting that.
What do you mean? And, it's not a certificate; it's a letter.
It's a letter. Yeah.
Okay.
It sets out what my status is, and I'm classed as being completely non-infectious.
That's interesting.
Asymptomatic, and that I'm immune. As I've said before, I'm immune to this particular strain. But it's like the flu. From this year's flu.
Well, the race is on to try and beat that second mutation off at the pass. You're a solicitor in Arklow. Were you back in work, Donald?
Yes, I've been back at work since Thursday.
And everyone's okay? Anyone worried about working with
everybody. I mean, we're like all our colleagues in Wicklow, we're using social distancing. We're limiting the access that, we're not seeing clients unless it's absolutely necessary. We've even got new guidelines in relation to doing wills and things like that from the Law Society, which is very positive. But I mean, as regards myself, I'm actually free. Like, so what I'm doing in my office at the moment is the only person who will actually answer the door is me, because, you know, I'm the one person that can be certain that I'm not at risk from anybody coming in. And we're just following all the protocols then in relation to people coming in and stuff like that. And I have to pay credit to an awful lot of the businesses here in Arklow in the way that they've responded and the way that they've adapted. I saw a takeaway last night doing a fantastic job in relation to still feeding the good people of Arklow, which is very important. But, you know, following the correct procedures in relation to the social distancing and all that. And really the point I want to get across...
Did your family, when you were taken into hospital, which I don't think would happen now, you'd be told to isolate at home. What did your family do?
Well, my family went immediately into home isolation and did the full 14 days in complete isolation, and I have to thank everybody for helping them out and dropping off groceries and doing everything. But they just went into complete lockdown, as you'd expect, and followed all the procedures correctly.
And was it known locally that you had got coronavirus?
Well, there was an unmerciful amount of speculation in relation to me. I mean, in fairness, Arklow's a small town. We're a very close community. And obviously it did get around very quickly about me being, which is, you know, I mean, in fairness, I was a former Fine Gael councillor, so I have a reasonably high profile in the town. But what was very unfortunate about it was people then started speculating about other people and putting things out about other people, which was extremely, I mean, as I've said before, that was more difficult to deal with, was the attacks on other people who were connected to me or very indirectly connected to me. And, you know, people alleging that they were on their way to hospital and they had us and all this kind of stuff, which was nonsense. And it was social media and WhatsApp. And what's particularly annoying about it is that people, I mean, from where I was in the matter, I was able to contact people and say, listen, could you please ring this person and just correct that? And the person might take down the Facebook post, but they never sent out anything apologising and saying, listen, I got this wrong. So, obviously, one person gets a WhatsApp and they send it on and on and on.
Yeah, that's crazy, yeah.
Now, thankfully, and full credit to Ciara Kelly, for when she came out, she got in front of it and she said, look, I have it and, you know, I'm hoping that I can get out there in 14 days' time and help people myself because I'll be, you know, in the same status that I'm now in. And, it, you know, that was very important. So I do think all that has changed an awful lot. And I think we're doing a very, very good job in this country. I think an awful lot of people have got the message. I think the government have been doing the level best that they can. And I just think that we have one chance, and this is the only reason I'm on, is we have one chance over the next couple of weeks to shut this thing down. Because, I mean, anybody that's watching Sky News, it's almost heartrending to see the situation in Italy. Mm. And unfortunately for them, they didn't know the position they were in until it was too late.
Yeah.
We still have a chance here.
Okay.
So as you keep saying, Joe, wash your hands, keep your social distance.
Mm.
Just for the sake of everybody in County Wicklow, please respect the guidelines that are there from the Wicklow Uplands Council, from the Wicklow County Council, and just, you know, there are tons of public spaces in this country. You don't all have to flock to the one area. Just plenty of places you can go for a walk. And yes, people should go for a walk, and they should try and, make the best of the situation. But if there was ever an occasion when people need to just stick together by staying apart.
Okay. Well said, Donal. I'm glad you made a full recovery and your friends as well. By the way, have you any idea how you contracted CV19 when you were in Italy? Looking back on it, as they say,
it's very hard to know, Joe. Because there was a group of 18 of us, seven of us got it, and other people didn't, and people in the same room as other people for far more than the 15 minutes didn't get it, and other people did, which I think is something I know that there's a study coming out in Australia and Melbourne in relation to looking into things like that, which might prove important at some stage as to why certain people are vulnerable to it and certain people aren't. But we really can't pinpoint any one event where all of us were in the same place at the same time. You know, it's just not possible.
Okay. Donal O'Sullivan in Arklow, glad to hear your... not that you'd notice any different, but you are, that you were not in the full of your health, but you are in the full of your health officially, and you have a letter to say you're free of the coronavirus. Thanks indeed, Donal, and stay well. 51551, wash your hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And a statement, another statement in from AIB. Any customers impacted by COVID-19 who contacts us are entitled to a 3-month payment break or moratorium today. The simplest way to avail of this is to fill in the form on our website, aib.ie, COVID-19, obviously. Some calls may have taken place while we were putting our systems in place for COVID-19. If impacted customers who contacted the show are willing to take a call from us, we will apply the payment break. Alternatively, the simplest path is for our customers to fill in the short form on our website. So that's AIB saying publicly we will do it. No ifs or buts. Any customers impacted by COVID-19 who contacts us are entitled to a 3-month payment break or moratorium today. Now, that's as clear as daylight, the beautiful daylight we're getting these days. Pori Prendergast has contacted us from the UK. Pori, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What's your situation, or your family situation?
My brother tested positive for coronavirus on Saturday, just gone a few days ago. They were here last weekend. My mom was visiting last weekend. Mm-hmm. And my brother had moved over for work. He moved over about a week or two before, and we were...
So he moved over to London?
He moved to London looking in search of work, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And then last weekend, my mom came over to visit, and the three of us went to my cousin's engagement party about nine or 10 days ago. And on the Sunday, when things started to ramp up, you know, we kind of woke up. They were supposed to be here. My mom was supposed to be here till tomorrow. And I just said, I don't think it's right for you to be in the UK. My brother has underlying health issues. He's had pneumonia, pleurisy, asthma, all in the past, collapsed lungs. And my mom is, you know, respiratory, and she's a smoker. I thought you were at risk. I just want to get you home as quick as possible. So I booked a flight for them last Sunday. They flew home last Monday. And Monday evening on the way home, they started to feel unwell, and by Tuesday, my brother was extremely ill with the coronavirus, but he was taken into hospital on Thursday and confirmed Saturday night. Now, my mom was with him. Her symptoms, she was very sick too, but her symptoms weren't as bad. She didn't have to be hospitalized. Mm-hmm. She had her test at one of the drive-thru centers on Saturday. She's still awaiting her results. My brother, we're hoping, might be able to come home today. He's through the worst of it, but he's had the hellish few days. He's only 28. And my mum, you know, she doesn't know what situation. Obviously, he's going to have to come home, and she's still waiting for her results. And it's just been a really scary time. And a question was put to in a press conference from my brother, from another journalist, to the Taoiseach today, Leo Varadkar, who said that they're following the South Korean model, and obviously we should follow the advice of the chief medical officers, which absolutely have the most utmost respect for. And of course, I heed all of their advice. But what I would say is that advice only works if people are actually social distancing, and that's like your previous caller was saying. People aren't. Let's say we, and I know the Taoiseach has said, let's not go by what social media and Twitter say. Well, no, the physical evidence is there. There are photographs. People have been telling me they're going to parks. They're completely full. I didn't take it seriously until last weekend, and people before that I had been out might have called me a hypocrite. But until I think we realise the severity of this, get worse.
When I literally visited your family, stay there for a sec, Pádraig.
It couldn't have come any closer,
1857 15 815. Joan, good afternoon, who's Pádraig and indeed Michael's mother. How are you, Joan?
I'm okay. I've been extremely worried and felt very isolated, which of course I am. I've been in quarantine now myself because of Micheál and because of his status, because suspected of coronavirus, and I too was, because we both became ill together.
And has Pádraig been diagnosed with?
Micheál, yes.
Sorry, Micheál, who's in the hospital in Kerry. Has he been confirmed as having coronavirus?
Yes, was confirmed on Saturday evening.
Okay.
That he had it.
So. And you're awaiting on result. You're awaiting results.
Yes.
And what's God? You've two big worries at the minute. One, your son, and two, mm-hmm. your the results of your test.
Yes. Now, obviously, being a mother, it's incredible. I'm not really worrying about myself. Plus, I'm feeling okay now.
Okay.
The worry was my son, because he's in hospital, and we see what goes on in the news, and that people have respiratory problems or are compromised. And because of Micheál's asthma, I was scared that he would deteriorate and ultimately need a respirator, as many people will do. And the awful thing about it, it's a double whammy, because you're at home, you cannot see the person, you don't know, nobody can contact them, or indeed I live on my own, and the only person in my house is two cats, and I'm going through the isolation on my own. So the anxiety around it, I was worried about Micheál, because I know it affected him. He has terrible anxiety because he felt so bad. He thought that he was scared that he was going to die because he felt so ill. And then in turn for me, that increases my anxiety at home. and I couldn't switch my head off.
And how did Micheál end up in hospital, Joan? You came back from London, you were feeling unwell, was it on the Monday? How did things deteriorate?
They deteriorated literally overnight. Both of us came home on the Monday evening, and Monday night, I was in my bedroom, he was in his, and during the night, I developed, going to London, just as I was getting ready to go, I developed, I felt a bit of a cold, sneezing, runny nose, and while I was in England, an odd cough. Now, it wasn't coughing continuously, it was an odd cough, itchy throat, and I just thought, I'm not sure about this, and nothing else. And we came home, and that night, I just felt like I had a full-blown head cold. I was sneezing, okay. I was coughing, and Micheál, on the other turn, from his bedroom, was saying, "Mum, I feel really ill, I've got a really high temperature."
Okay.
And he started the same night the two of us did. And then the next few nights were getting worse for him and me, and I moved downstairs because he was very worried about us staying together because he's really was concerned about COVID-19, and I went downstairs, so we separated, and I had really flu symptoms and pains in the bones and a temperature, and then he was, as time went on, he was getting sicker and sicker, yeah. And just said, I can't cope with this. I can't, you know, at times he couldn't breathe and he was hyperventilating and I couldn't help him. It was awful.
And when did you ring the ambulance?
It was on Thursday. Now, admittedly, I feel bad that I didn't do it from Tuesday or Wednesday night because already that was... He already had the symptoms of this, you know, high temperature.
But the hospital were, the emergency services were in no doubt that he had to be dealt with. He was,
yes.
In other words, the ambulance came immediately.
Immediately. Well, I had rang the doctor on St. Patrick's Day. I couldn't get to the doctor. Rang on Wednesday morning and said, we're both unwell. Can we be tested for COVID-19? And they said yes. And I thought, fine, we'll wait a day or two and we'll get checked. But obviously by Thursday, Micheál was getting just as sick during the day. The temperature wasn't just coming at night. He had it during the day. He was struggling to cope, you know, with his symptoms. And we rang the ambulance services and they were marvellous. And they came.
Now, I'm told that Micheál has given an interview to Sky News from his hospital bed. Were you aware of that? Joan?
I was only told that, but would you believe, one of the reasons is I can't sleep at night. As a mother, I'm so,
the
anxiety for me being at home, and then in the morning.
Okay, well, it's on Sky News as we speak. I've been given a clip of it. Now, I obviously haven't heard it, but I'm told he's able to give an interview and he's not tubed up or anything, so thank God for that. When do you, have you been told what his current situation is?
Well, I was rang earlier today that they may be releasing him this evening.
Okay, well, that's good news. I want people to remember that because I think,
yes.
Obviously, when he was giving this interview, he might have been upset. So I'm also very conscious if there's children listening. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's just he's worried about, as you said, he got very, very worried. But this is your son, Micheál, on Sky News at the moment.
It has been an ordeal that I will never forget, and it brought about a lot of existential questions of my own life, kind of being trapped in this isolated room and like being so sick and so weak I couldn't even raise my head, and I thought that if my life ends now, have I been a good person and have I done enough in my life? And there's still like, so much I want to achieve. I'm 28, I'm young, I'm sporty, into the gym. I would have never imagined I would have been so sick. Having contracted the virus and having more of the severe symptoms, pneumonia, being the more deadly of them all. It has been, it's been harrowing, and as I said, it's indescribable. This is just a warning to anyone out there. I see recently people at beaches, at parks, at gyms. If you don't get affected as bad as I have, I guarantee that your parents or your aunts and uncles or your grandparents are going to be. And this virus is a killer. So I just hope that I can raise like some awareness and just try and help. Thanks.
That's very powerful, Joan.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, that's what he has been saying to me on the phone. I've been his lifeline because he wasn't, he didn't feel able to obviously talk to other people, and he's been ringing me saying how exactly how he's just been so afraid of dying.
Okay, and that report was posted by Stephen Murphy of Sky News. Thanks, Stephen. That's, I presume Michael Fillon himself, and he's in an isolation room, so there was no...
Of course.
He filmed himself on his phone and sent it on. But you say the news is good. The latest news you've got is good.
Well, yes, because he thank God, he hasn't been ventilated. The virus, he will have to, which he has having to do, fight himself, you know, and he has been doing that. And if he's over the worst, I feel, and the hospital feel, he's better at home. He'll still have these symptoms, but at least he may feel safer at home now because he's hopefully through the worst. He can be at home and feel safe at home. The only problem for me is there's different sides to this. He's tested positive. I don't know, am I positive or not? Hopefully. I'm bringing him home and I'm going to be separated from... It's going to be difficult. He's tested positive, so he's going to be in his bedroom and I'm going to be downstairs trying to avoid all contact with him.
Okay. Well.
So it added that stress as well. In some ways, if I tested positive for this, it means that I've been through it and I've had it. And we both have had it and can move on with our lives.
Okay, yeah.
Because the fear is, when am I going to get it? And if I get it? And often it's when I'm going to get it and in what form.
It's an interesting way of looking at it. Joan, thanks again. And thanks to Michal and indeed Stephen Murphy of Sky News. That's a great public service in getting that message out there so powerfully from his isolation room. And hopefully he will be home. He is recovering and he will be home with you in the next few days. Joan Prendergast and Padraig Prendergast and indeed Michael Prendergast and Stephen Murphy. Thank you all. 51551, wash your hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
You've over 2.5 hours, just so under 2.5 hours to get in your 300-word short story in our short story with John Byrne's competition, and he launched it on Liveline and we've been plugging it all week. 300 words or less, and have it in by 5 o'clock this afternoon to johnbynestory@gmail.com. All that information is going out on the Twitter feed at the moment. Donny Anderson. Donny, you were a Dublin, you were a farmer farming in Dublin, isn't that correct?
That's right, Joe.
They do exist. Yeah. They do exist.
Yeah, few,
so you're a Dublin farmer. There's not many of you. Yeah. But tell us, Donny, what have you noticed now about CV19 and physical distancing?
I think we're seeing a lot more people than we would have seen normally. We have a visitor attraction here, the local reservoir.
Okay. And, where is that, Donny?
Bournabrina.
Oh, Bourne, okay.
Glenismole, yeah.
Yeah.
But for the past few days, and just, it's great to see the bit of good weather, but it's unfortunate in one way because it's bringing more people out in the outdoors. And
is there a problem with that, Donny?
Well, parking is one of the problems that would affect us a bit. And I know it seems insignificant now with the other things that are taking over, but the amount of people that are just walking and they can't really avoid each other because of so many people there, like, you know.
And when you say parking, do you mean cars are parked along the road, and if an emergency vehicle from Talla Fire Station tried to get up, or the ambulance from Talla tried to get up, they couldn't get through?
No way. I'd say if we had... Now, there's where we are, there's two roads into the valley, but one of the roads, I'd say, if you had to get out, it would be helicopter, because other that, or an ordinary car or Jeep or something, because it's just not room for a void vehicle to pass.
Yeah.
Where people just park, and it's great to see people enjoying themselves and coming out in the country, but like they don't actually realise that there are people living there and working there 24/7, whether there's snow or rain or hail or whatever, we're still going about our business, you know. And people park at gateways and things like that, and they'll say, I didn't think anybody was using it, and I just say, like, you just didn't think, because it wouldn't be a gate unless somebody was going to use it.
That's true, yeah. And what do you farm, Donny?
We've just mostly sheep now.
Yeah. And are the people who are out walking, by the way, are they maintaining the 2 meters spread between every person?
It would be physically impossible on part of the places they're walking, because the roads they'd be walking on wouldn't even be 2 meters wide.
Yeah, okay, good point. Like, yeah. So, well, unless, you know, unless they're in front and behind.
Yeah, but like if they're meeting each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I was thinking, like, that they could actually turn the area where the people are walking into a one-way system for pedestrians.
Yeah, but I was even, I agree, but I was looking at this morning, where was it, on Twitter, and someone posted a photograph, it was Des McKeown, from Kells. You said it was this morning, so I presume it's, and it's three lads sitting on a bench. They're not identifiable, thankfully, but they're sitting on the bench. The photograph's taken from behind, but the three of them are, I'm not saying they're arm in arm, but they're as close as they would be. They are closer than they would be if they were in three cinema seats. Do you follow me?
I do, yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know.
It's just like that man that you're after having on there, Micheál. Like it's just so unfortunate to hear somebody having it, but does it need something like that to get it through to people? It's, like, seemingly the only way to stop this from spreading is from not contacting with people. And if I meet somebody on the road and I'm talking to them and I stay me 2 metres away and I say, I don't know what I have, you know, how can I know? Thank God, please God, I won't have it. But you never know, like.
Yeah, I know.
And so you just be afraid that, you know, because...
The virus doesn't travel, people do. It travels on people and through people.
That's
droplets, yeah.
Yeah, every day is a learning experience, isn't it? Like we're finding out new things every hour, really, about it.
Okay. So, Donny, I'm just thinking, like, one, there's very few positives, there's none in this, but one of the things we must realise is that our production of food in Ireland, I'm thinking of the beef industry and your own industry and the dairy industry, it is in many ways becoming our unique selling point. Our production of our food, the reputation of our food, the quality of our food is just magnificent. The fact that every burger that's eaten in McDonald's across Europe is produced in Don Foods down in Waterford, in a state of the art. It's a great selling point, and we have to big it up when all this is over and encourage people, even more people, to get involved in it. So you keep farming, Donny, as long as you can, even through. But when it's the last crisis like this, I think we were talking, it was during the Beast from the East a couple of years ago. Sure, that's paled into total insignificance in the light of coronavirus. So, Donny, mind yourself and stay well. Yes?
Joe, just during the Beast from the East, we were more or less in self-isolation anyway because nobody could get to us. But now everybody wants to come. And
there's nothing about, given that this virus did begin in animals. Now, it's animals that should never have been in the same and never were in the same vicinity until they were sold side by side at that awful market in Wuhan. But I heard one case of a dog in Hong Kong, but there's no case of animals contracting coronavirus, is there, Donny?
Not that I have heard of. Now, you know yourself, you hear rumours like that dogs can spread it, and I hope they don't. Yeah. But the doctor that you had on Friday didn't seem to think that.
No, that's the scientific information at this stage. So where are we now? Where are we now in your season? We're coming up to Easter lamb.
Well, we don't have Easter lamb. We'd be actually having them born at Easter.
Oh, yeah, okay.
We're just started lambing now because we're in the hills.
That's
lamb.
Bad planning, is it, Donny?
No.
How does it work out? To talk to me. Given that lambing at Easter, given that lamb is supposed to be the best, the Easter food, you've organised it that your yos don't give birth until after Easter.
Be around. We kind of leave it till nearly April because the days are getting longer and the weather is getting a bit better.
Okay.
And the lambs that are Easter lambs would have been born probably before Christmas.
Oh, dear.
Most of them are soon after. Okay. So it's a specialised and it's expensive. Like, we're up in the hills, so you won't be able to produce them kind of lambs really well because it just wouldn't be worthwhile, and then you wouldn't be doing hill sheep if you're doing that. We try to produce as much as we can from naturally.
Okay, well, farming, as we're realising once again, and all its ancillary is the backbone of this country. It really is. It really is. Tony Anderson, thanks indeed, and thanks for that civic message about people in Bourne na Breen and not maintaining physical distance. And I don't know if people check each other when they see people close together. You might try it, but I don't know how far you get.
You'd worry when you see so many people out, and I just don't think they realise how... Like, if any of us get it, sure, we, especially if you're farming, you're kind of, it's a sort of a one-person job in a lot of cases now. And if that person is not available to do the work, where do you go, like, you know?
Okay, Tony, mind yourself. Stay well. Sarah is 51551. Wash your hands. Sarah is in Wexford. Go ahead, Sarah. What the situation at the weekend?
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks, sir.
Yeah, it was just like the last caller was kind of saying there about keeping distance. We're in like a kind of a holiday village, you know, but there's it's hard to say numbers, but there's probably about a third of us live here all the time. And then like in the summer, you'd see, you know, all the summer people would come down and it would get really busy. But I mean, down here on, you know, yesterday on the beach was like a weekend in August. The place was, and I mean, I know a lot of people have holiday homes and some people are probably coming down to self-isolate down here, but what we're seeing is a lot of people coming down and going back and coming down and going back. And you know, so I really felt for all those people in Glendalough when I saw the pictures, because like that, we'd be a small rural community, and when you've got, you know, hundreds of, you know, families and cars descending on you, you know, and you know, we've got neighbours down here who are, you know, he has a serious underlying condition, and his wife is in early stages of pregnancy. And their house, I mean, they were hemmed in on all sides. They have a house near the beach by, you know, people enjoying their weekend. And I mean, these people are afraid to leave and go to the supermarket. So it's just, we see the airports are closed down, like Angela Merkel is stopping travel within Germany, and so I can't really understand why people think that it's all right to...
Well, Sarah, are you saying, just to clarify, are you saying if you want to come down to your holiday home, this is just your opinion, though I know in the UK it's a government statement asking people not to go to their holiday home, but if you're coming down to your holiday home, please come down and self-isolate and don't be going back up and down to your workplace.
Or come down and stay put, Joe, do you know what I mean? Yeah. But, you know, don't be coming down to cut the grass and then leaving and coming down and having the weekend with the kids and heading back, you know, because you're in the shops and we're spreading, you know, and I mean, you could see in Glendalough, I mean, that's a tiny little community up in Glendalough. Yeah. And then you've got, you know, thousands of people descending on them, you know, and we don't know enough about how long the virus lasts on our shoes, in our shops, on our products. So I just think, you know, having a bit of thought around would be helpful.
Now, some people say, well, my house in Wexford is on its own and it's bigger than on top of each other in Dublin, and I can go down and stay and not leave.
Great, and but then stay put.
Stay put, yeah, okay.
You know, I think, isn't there a thing in Germany that she's not letting them move now? I think you're not allowed to go... do an overnight.
And no more than two people.
Yeah, together, I mean, yeah. And limit it to that. Otherwise, yeah. Joe, we're all going to end up in a situation where we're not able to get out for walks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, people are being, you know, and just to have a little bit of a thought for the people who live in areas, in small areas.
Okay, Sarah, stay well. Thanks indeed.
You too, Joe. Stay well.
Bye-bye. That's Sarah in Wexford. 51551, wash your hands.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Pádraig ó Eachtagán. Pádraig, good afternoon. You're in Ross Gray, County Tipperary. You're a dentist and you have an idea.
Yes, Joe. Thank you for calling me.
Okay, go ahead.
Very briefly, Joe, the dental practice, general dental practice, is in crisis at the moment because of different instructions and guidelines that we're getting. But leave that to one side for a minute. We extract somewhere in the region of 170,000 to 180,000 teeth a year.
Okay.
Most of those extractions, maybe 90% of those extractions, are due to an acute dental pain.
Yeah.
So with all the dental practices now closed, we have patients out there that we can't help. We're totally helpless.
Yeah.
And I've come up with an idea. And the idea is that I require very, very little to take a tooth out. I need a chair, I need some equipment, and I need a safe environment. I have the chair, I have the basic tools, what I'm missing is the safe environment.
Mm-hmm.
And my idea is that I would be able to rent, and I have sourced, an insulated van, which is like one that's used for a refrigerated van. There's lots of them lying around in secondhand car lots all over the country. Put a dental chair in it. Make sure everything is hygienic. And then I have a mobile dental extraction, emergency dental extraction service. And after each patient is seen, I can disinfect the van in the same way as you see the streets of Paris and Italy and Rome and so forth being disinfected. I have one problem, Joe.
Okay.
I can't get insurance. I can't transfer my car insurance to the van. My insurance company won't accept that. My practice insurance company won't allow me to transfer the public liability part of my insurance to a mobile service. And I'm talking to you, Joe, to appeal to the insurance industry to see if anybody can see their way to providing insurance for this service.
And if you did get insurance, how soon are you ready to get the van on the road, so to speak, the mobile dental emergency service?
Thursday.
Okay. Now, a number of your colleagues, we covered this on Friday with Professor Martin Cormack, and some dentists are open. Most of them are closed because they believed, the argument is that there's a lot of fluids going around the mouth, obviously.
Joe, can I just make it simple for everyone to understand what the difficulty is. When we take up one of our drills, coming out of the end of it is water and air under pressure.
Yeah.
So when I put that in a patient's mouth, for example, your solicitor caller from earlier, who had no symptoms whatsoever but was positive, I create an aerosol of water and air and whatever contaminants he has in his mouth. And that aerosol lasts for up to an hour inside in the room that I'm in.
Okay.
And that's the whole issue.
But
person can get infected, my staff can get infected, I can get infected.
So how does the van get around that problem?
I don't use aerosol or I don't use water. And I can disinfect the van completely. Every wall, every surface, within 20 minutes of completing the extraction.
You need to inject an anaesthetic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Doesn't need water under pressure or air
And would you be on your own performing this procedure?
On my own.
Okay. And you'd be kitted up.
Exactly. I have the kit. I have everything, Joe, except the insurance.
And I presume, we have emergency ambulances all between Fire Brigade and National Ambulance Service. I presume there's no emergency dental clinic, mobile dental clinic, is there?
No, not that I know of. But this isn't really, this is a response to this extraordinary situation we find ourselves in. I'm at home, like loads and loads of dentists, feeling totally helpless. It's not in our nature to leave people in trouble.
I know that. We all know that, thankfully.
And I've been thinking, and last Friday I came up with this plan, and within a half day, I had everything arranged except the insurance.
Okay, well, that's a plea to the insurance industry. Do they say why? Because of something completely new?
Well, I can't get I can't understand the reason. If I wanted to rent a van to clear out my garden shed and take the waste to the recycling centre, there'd be no difficulty.
But say a dentist has to go, say, to a nursing home.
Oh, brilliant. Exactly, Joe. Now we have a situation where nursing homes are completely closed down. The patients can't get out, and nobody... If I had my emergency service running, I could stop outside a nursing home, my extension lead plugged in, and deal with the patient almost outdoors without having to go inside at all.
Yeah. You're going to pursue it, obviously, because...
I'm ready to go. If I can get an insurer to hold their hand up and say, we're thinking outside the box for you, we'll do it.
Okay. Have any other country ever do this?
They're common in America.
How are they, yeah?
Yeah. Like for full dental service, Joe. I've been in one.
Wow.
So this is no...
So the van pulls up at a nursing home or...
School,
yeah.
And so on. And it serves a lot of remote communities in the States as well.
So why has there never been mobile dental vans in Ireland?
Good question. We have a lot of regulation, Joe. Maybe it's the insurance problem that I'm having is the cause of it. Thought of it.
But a lot of things, a lot of shibboleths and a lot more are going out the window at the moment.
Precisely.
Maybe one of them should be, why have we not got mobile? We've mobile barbers, we've mobile banks, we've mobile libraries, and we've obviously mobile intensive care units in ambulances and paediatric units in ambulances for moving children at great speed with great complexity. And there's no such thing as a mobile dental unit.
And what I'm proposing isn't full service, but it certainly would deal with an awful lot of acute dental pain.
That is the key. Porrick, as you say, for someone to get a toothache is just so awful.
And at the moment, Joe, I just literally, while I was holding for you, I saw a Twitter come up from the dental hospital in UCC appealing for dentists to help because it seems they're inundated with patients looking for emergency dental care.
Okay. Well, Páirc Oireachtaíochán, you're in Roscrea in County Tipperary.
And you have my number, Joe. If
any insurance company is willing,
please put them in touch.
And it'd be a great public service.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Thanks indeed. Nicky Dempsey was in sound. Broadcast coordinator was Doc Martin. The show today was produced by Fergus Sweeney. Rebecca Meehan is the series producer.